tell you what we got going on. We have an awesome guest here today.
Yes.
I can't wait.
We
I've been waiting.
Do.
Tim gave me homework to prepare for this podcast. And since I did my homework, I've been so excited for this, we'll say interview, for this podcast that it's just, I've been waiting all day for it. Let me put you that way.
I don't think we should keep him waiting any longer. So we have a special guest tonight from Syracuse, New York, our hometown. We have Miss Liz Petrone. Now, Liz is a mother of four, a wife, daughter, sister, and a suicide survivor who has learned how to navigate the winding road of life. After the tragic suicide death of her mother, Liz found unprecedented support and community in writing about 6 years ago. And through her writing, she has shared intimate stories of her life, stories that have helped the readers and have certainly touched so many readers. And she started with a blog and recently has just released a book titled The Price of Admission. And it's about embracing a life of grief and joy all together. I got this book, man, I was blown away and I'm super excited. So please welcome to our podcast, Liz Petrone. Liz, hi, how are you?
Hi guys. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So mother of four, let's get right into the family. what is homeschooling like for you right now?
So I read this thing the other day that said, we're not supposed to call it homeschooling. We're supposed to call it crisis schooling. And that's totally what's going on here. Although to be fair, it hasn't started here because my kids don't start till Monday. But we've had Zoom meetings and stuff to try to figure out how to navigate all of this. And just two Zoom meetings has been enough to send me into a total tailspin. So I'm now completely panicked and freaking out.
You'll be fine.
Join the rest of the world,
I think. Exactly. We are all in it together. How old are your kids?
The youngest is 6 and the oldest is 15.
Okay. So 6, 15, and
14 and 10. We just had a birthday yesterday. So
oh, nice.
14 and 10 now. Yeah.
So I got to get right into the book because I love
meat and potatoes. Come on, man. I'm waiting anxiously.
I guess my first question before I get into the book is, what brought you to that point? What brought you to the point of writing? And if you want to tell some of your story and then we'll go from there. And then we'll continue from there. So just bring us up to speed, you know, of what inspired you to put your words out there.
So I think there's two answers to that question. One is, when I first started blogging, my daughter who just turned 10, was maybe 2 or 3. And so I had 3 kids that were little, my youngest had not been born yet. And there's very few things in the world that are as isolating as mothering small children, or parenting small children, I should say. But a lot of that obviously falls on mothers. And, you know, I didn't really have much of a social scene. I didn't go out ever. I worked and I parented and that was it. And that it's just so lonely. So I think the first thing I ever wrote was a piece about the postpartum depression that I had after that daughter, my third daughter was born, which also isolating, lonely. And it was like breathing again because I couldn't really connect with people the way I wanted to in real life, but I could throw these words out onto the internet and people were like, hey, me too. You know, lots of people. It's instant connection. So you don't have to go through all the, can I say bullshit?
You can.
You don't have to go through all the bullshit of like, you know, getting to know people before you get down to the meat and potatoes of the good stuff, which is, you know. But the other thing is, my mom died like a couple of years after that. And my mother had been an alcoholic and addicted to pills and suffered with mental illness for a large portion of our lives. And we were not allowed to talk about it. So the very first thing I did when she died was said, I'm going to write, you know, I'm going to tell this story because we were never allowed to talk about it, which I thought was part of the reason that she died. You know, I've always said that she died of a disease of silence. Is my opinion. And I think if we had talked more freely about what was going on, both us as a family, but also like us as a society had talked more freely about what was going on, behind closed doors, behind this perfect image, then she'd still be here.
I know a little bit from your book. You know, your mother died 2 days after your birthday. You were 36 weeks pregnant, right around there, somewhere around there with your fourth child. And, you know, the chapter where you describe that moment that your mother was found, the scream, you know, your sister, and then the screaming and how you felt and reacted to it. You know, when I read that, being in emergency services for so many years, I've been to many, many calls that have been a result of suicide. And the screams you described and the emotions that you had that moment, I've seen many times. So that chapter in that book, I had to stop for a moment because I know exactly that emotion that you were putting out there. And I've seen it and I've seen that pain. And I think that, that you describing that in the book was just, to me personally, was, so true and so much love in that towards your mother. That, can you go through, you know, that moment, the few days after, you talked about in the church and what people were coming up to you and the wake and what they were telling you about your mother, and just go through that a little bit with us.
Yeah, for sure. So I think September is Suicide Awareness Month, have that correct.
Today is actually National Suicide Prevention Day, ironically.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Right.
I know this is super ironic. I don't think it was planned that way, right? But today is National Suicide Prevention Day. But yep. Anyhow, yeah, crazy.
Perfect. That's awesome. Yeah, so I think when you love somebody who is an addict, you rehearse their death, I think. I mean, I don't know if everybody does that, but I think it's a common thing. And I had all these visions, and my sister and I would even have these conversations, like she's going to drive drunk. And the worst one that I always return to, because we live in this neighborhood with all these children, is she's going to like hit a kid on a bike, or, you know, she's going to hurt somebody, and we're going to have to live with that. Never once did it cross my mind that it would be suicide, which is probably ignorant of me. I don't know why, but so when she died, you know, all of that rehearsing, it does you no good whatsoever. There's no such thing as being prepared. And I don't think that's just because it was a suicide. I think there's no such thing as being prepared for tragedy in general, no matter how often you replay it in your head or try to prepare yourself for it. But as you alluded to, you know, my mother was gorgeous. She was dynamic. She was successful. She had a good career. She had thousands of husbands. She did well for herself, you know? And so people kept coming up to me, both reaching out to me after she died, and then also coming up to me in the receiving line at the funeral, and saying, you know, oh, I had no idea, but she was so, insert adjective here, she was so beautiful, she was so put together, she was so successful, she was so whatever, which is all true. It's all true. She was, but she was also suffering immeasurably. And it's funny, I had somebody, actually somebody that I work with, the other day, we were on a call, and she had read the book, and she said to me, you know, if I didn't know you, I would have thought you were this confident professional woman. And I said, I am. I am. I also struggle. Like, these two things do not have to be separate from each other. If there's anything that I would really like to get out there in the world with this book, it's that idea right there, that you can be successful, you can be beautiful, you can be put together, you can be dynamic, all of these things. And you can also be, you know, carrying this huge struggle around with you. You can be anywhere on that continuum at any time. And most of us are. I don't think any of us lives, you know, totally in the struggle or totally in, you know, the joy of life. I think we live on that continuum almost all of the time.
The very beginning of your book takes you back to when you were 16, sitting at the kitchen table. Did that, the decorative apple, I think it's called, did that come back to you after your mother's death, that story of sitting at the table? And I'll try to explain this story. Let me know if I get anything wrong. So you're 16, you're going through a hard time yourself, right? And you're at the table and your mother comes home and she's beautiful and she's cooking in the kitchen and she's still in her work clothes and you're kind of struggling and she stops and looks at you and says, "Are you okay?" And then you tell her, "I'm fine.
I'm fine." Yeah.
But you weren't, right? Something was bothering you.
Oh, no. Neither of us was fine.
Right. And then you talk, can you tell us about the apples on the table?
Yes. So we had these apples. So our house was always really, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, we didn't live in a mansion or anything, but the house was always very put together and, everything had a place. And so there was this bowl that sat on the kitchen table every single day of our childhood and it had Granny Smith apples in it always. And they were the perfect apples, like the best ones you could find, but they were not to be eaten. They were just to sit in the bowl and look beautiful. And then if you wanted to eat, there were apples that were in the crisper that were, you know, not, they didn't make the cut, but they were for consumption, which was a thing that we all knew. And it was a given and my friends loved to make fun of it. But because I was 16 and a jerk and whatever, I felt like I was going to just eat one of these apples and, you know, screw everybody else. And I was had it in my hand and was and messing with it and it cracked open and was totally rotten on the inside. And I think there are these moments, and I don't know if this is just like if you're a writer person or if this is a general thing, but there are these moments that happen in your life and you go, oh, this is big, like this means something. And I'm not pretending as 16 years old that I had any idea what that meant, but I knew that that belonged somewhere and you'd like to take that and put that in this little mental file in your brain. So as this is all happening and my mother has died and we're having these conversations and, you know, we're saying to the priest, we would like you to talk about suicide openly. And my mother's family is saying, oh, no, we would not. I think, oh, this is the apple. This is what that is.
It's incredible. It's just
to answer your question. I mean, as it was happening, I knew it was something and then it came back out. Because I think that was the moment when it was supposed to serve me.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt. The homework that Tim had me do, he had me read one of your blog posts. And it was the, and this is everything I know for sure.
Yeah, which is really what became the prologue of the book.
It's incredible. So I haven't read the book yet. I know, obviously, Tim has. I'll tell you, the way that you write is incredible. Like, the way that you put your words together. So it's funny because I don't know if that part's going to make the cut when we were just chatting earlier and Tim's like, oh, I'm 50 years old and now I'm finally reading. Well, I'm not quite 50 yet, but I just over the past few years really tried to get into reading and really try to find books that inspire me that I enjoy. And my wife can sit down and read a book that she doesn't even like. She'll read it cover to cover. And I'm like, how's the book? She's like, yeah, it's not that good. I'm like, well, then what are you doing? Me, I need to be drawn in and I need to feel it, right? So I read your blog post, and which is talking about everything you guys just talked about with the shiny apples, talking about your beautiful mom, and obviously how you can just correlate the two and how on the outside everything seems so perfect. Mm-hmm. And you pick that apple up and you go to take a bite, and on the inside, you had no idea that is happening to this apple. So the way you write had me so drawn in and so just, I didn't want to stop reading. Like, I can't wait to read this book. I'm blown away by the way you write. So I just want you to know you have a talent like no other. I'm telling you, if somebody like me who's trying to force myself into being a reader, that's what I need, that hook. I need to read something to where I felt like I was sitting next to you at that table. I felt like I was right there with you. I had the image of your mom. I had the apple. I had it all. You're phenomenal. I blown away by how you wrote that. Yeah, no problem at all. I would bet the statistics are in the favor of the majority of people.
Oh yeah.
That's how we are. Like there's
all right.
You could even, so you said it a couple times already and you've said it a little differently each time. But the point of what you've said has remained the same, and that you can be that shiny apple and you can be struggling too. We live in a society, mm-hmm. I feel like, where a lot of things have to be one or the other. So if you, and just to get into the current social stuff that we're going on and use that as an example, if you support cops, you're a racist. Mm-hmm. If you support Black Lives Matter, you hate cops. Mm-hmm. There's, you can't do both. And it's exactly what you're saying is people, there's that stigma or that feeling that you can't be confident and strong and whatever, independent and a happy person and still have struggles. You have to mm-hmm. be one or the other. You're either a complete freaking mess or you're perfect. There's mm-hmm. nothing else. And the reality is, and you've said it, like I said, a couple times, it is not like that. You can be put together and things are good and this and that, but you can still have your struggles and your burdens yeah. and you know, things that you're whatever working on or things that you have going on in your life that aren't rainbows and unicorns, right? It's crazy.
I don't care how good your life is or, you know, or how many metrics of success as we measure them as a society you have attained. Nobody's life is perfect all the time. Nobody has that. Nobody lives in the unbridled joy space 100% of the time. When you asked me earlier about what made me write in the first place, and I said loneliness, the immediate thing that started happening, and probably the reason I wrote a second blog post and a third and a fourth and a book eventually, is the response from people. Because people want to be able to say me too. You know, I think that we are dying to say that to each other. We just don't get the opportunity, you know, in the school drop-off line or at the grocery store or as we pass each other at work or whatever makes up our day. So the amount of people that have reached out to me and said, I have that same story or that happened to me or I love somebody who struggled with that. It's unbelievable.
It's incredible.
I was going to say it's unbelievable, but I'm not even sure that that's the right word. It's believable. It's exactly what I think it should be. You know, we don't act like that's the case, but it is what's out there. That is what's happening. And it's not even the people you think it would be.
Right. A lot of times it's not. A lot of times a lot of times the people with the biggest smile are the people who are struggling the most inside, and mm-hmm. they're just not letting it out. Yeah, I mean, you absolutely nailed it. I have to ask you, and this is, I mean, obviously everything we're talking about is personal, so this is personal. I read the blog post. I was blown away. How did you get to the point where you're like, I'm writing a book? Did you decide that, or how did that come about, where you're like, you know what, I'm putting all this in a book, and I love it. How did you come up with that? What got you to the book?
I think all I ever wanted was to write a book. I've been reading books, and like you talked about your wife, that's me 100 times. I've been reading, devouring books since I could read, although the trajectory was funny, and I think it had to happen the way it happened because I'm not going to write a novel. I don't have that story inside of me, so I needed to have these pieces, like these building blocks, which is essentially what these blog posts became, sort of like puzzle pieces that got put together into what became the book. And I think the ultimate goal was always to see my name on a book. I actually wrote a very different book, and I wrote it right after my mom died. And I thank God that thing is not out in the world. I don't think you can write honestly about your grief from within the throes of your grief without it being a real hot mess, which is really what I put together the first time.
Right.
So
in the book, you talk about meeting Nick, your husband, mm-hmm. and you talk about the time that you, so when you were about 18, you attempted suicide yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter in your book called Everything is Not Going to Be Okay. And this is so spot on. And you talk about a night, you're home, there's a little mix up. You end up you thought you were taking ibuprofen. You end up taking painkillers. You guys were out drinking, having a good time. And you started panicking. And then he went to the other room, calls poison control, comes back in. And you were expecting him to say, everything's going to be okay. And instead, he said, I'm here.
Yeah.
First of all, huge high five to my man, Nick. I don't even know him.
Seriously, get Nick over here.
But
that's amazing.
You know, yes. Everything is not always going to be okay.
No.
And those words, just, I'm here for you for whatever you need.
Yeah.
At whatever moment that whatever's going on in your life, let him know I'm using it. I that right immediately, because I'm, oh, it'll be okay. Everything will be okay. Right. I've said that. And then I never really thought about it until I read the way you described it and said, wow, you know what? Everything isn't always going to be okay. And we are going to struggle as we go through this, you know, winding road of life. And we're going to have situations thrown at us where we're going to need each other, and we need to be there for each other. And just right. to say the words, I'm here, dude. Oh my gosh. So I just wanted to give you a shout out for putting those words in the pages, and it really opened my eyes to, wow. I mean, just makes so much sense.
And are we doing, like, my kids, I think about it, am I doing them a disservice by saying, you know, as a platitude, everything's going to be okay all the time? Because it's not.
Right.
You know, and I see that, like, as they're becoming, my older kids, they're becoming teenagers, and they're crises of the day are no longer these neat little packages of, you know, I hurt myself playing in the backyard, can you snap a Band-Aid on it? They're having real, true, complicated problems that I can't say everything's going to be okay. I mean, it probably will eventually, but it might not be tomorrow, and it might not be, you know, for a while.
So many people need to hear that, because just that comfort of being there for each other, just to that comfort of recognizing that things aren't always going to be okay, is just going to help each other through so much more. It's going to help lift each other up through whatever. It could be grief you're dealing with. It could be depression you're dealing with. It could be an addiction. It can be so many things. And when you're at that level, when you're, you know, at a low level, a dark place, you need that support. When you need it, not, you know, sometimes you know, you have to work your way to it. I'm a type of guy that when I get into a dark place, which I have, I need to look for the light when I'm ready, and not just, I don't need somebody barging in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Somebody can be here
definitely.
And not in your space. You know what I mean? Like I think I might say that in the book, but when I first did my yoga training and they would talk about, holding space for somebody, and I'm like, what is this, like, weird new age frou-frou nonsense? But right. I get it now. You know, I can hold space for you, and you can hold space for me, and I don't need to be at your house, like, with my arm around you. It's something that you can be there for somebody without necessarily being there.
Not smothering them. Right.
Right. Which, I mean, if you look at what's going on right now, and how physically separated everybody is, I think it's really important that we figure out how to do that for each other, because otherwise we're all going to be real lonely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Spot on.
I always say, and it's just the way that my brain works, I always say, it's all going to be okay. It's all going to work out. Like, we could be going through anything. And that's just what I always think. And it, like you just said, it doesn't mean things aren't going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Eventually they might be okay and everything might work itself out. But in this moment right here and right now, I don't necessarily need to hear that it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe I do, but I definitely need to also know that you are here. And that if I mm-hmm. need, I, like, so Tim was so excited. I mean, there's a bunch of parts of your book where Tim was so excited. Like, he called me. So I'm a texter, right? So I'll text like all day and night. Tim, this guy wants to FaceTime and stuff. Like, he wants to call all the time. He's like, a, like a, I don't know, 75, 80 year old man. He always wants to be, right? But there were so many times he called me. He's like, dude, listen to this. And he tells me like the next part in the book, and which continued to get me even more excited about it. And that part, he was like hammered home about it. He's like, listen to this. And it's funny because sometimes the things that are so simple and so basic end up being so important and such a big deal. Like, you were spending whatever 10 minutes talking about the fact that your husband said, I'm here.
You did say the darkness tells you how pain is simply the price of admission, which ends up being the title of the book. And then you proceed to say, but it's a price that is truly a bargain. When you think about it, the joy of life and the joy of just living and the things that are around us and the blessings that we have, that, you know, the darkness that we all deal with for different reasons, whatever that darkness is just simply the price of admission. It's the price of living a full, joyful life. You're going to have dark times. You're going to have grief. You're going to have moments of, you know, true sadness. And it's the price of admission. And when I saw the title of your book, I'm like, what price of admission? What's this all about? And then I found it in the book. And I love the way you put it. I love the way you described it. And I love the way you said that it was a bargain, truly, when you think about it.
And so the price of admission was the name of a blog post that I wrote where I finally told the story, saying that I myself was a suicide survivor. So that was the last story I ever told. You know, that was the thing that I kept inside forever because I was, you know, had my own feelings about it and I think had some shame. And I was like, I can't go around calling myself a truth teller and speak openly about my mother's death and, you know, keep hammering home this idea that we need to end the stigma and not be okay with speaking openly about my own history. So that was, for me, when I wrote that actual blog post and like kind of put it out there, and there were a lot of people in my life that didn't know that story, that was like the final step towards freedom. So a lot of people, I did a Bridge Street interview on book launch day, and the host said, "So Liz, you could write about anything. Why do you write about this stuff? Like, why do you tell these stories?" Which I think is a really funny question, and certainly one that I've asked myself, and definitely one that Nick has asked me. But they're the only stories that I have to tell. And there's this whole idea in writing that if you have a story inside of you that needs to come out, that everything else is just going to be you telling that story in some roundabout fashion, you know, like in metaphor or whatever. And for me, that was that story. Like, that is what needed to come out. That came out and everything else came together around it. So it was really important to me that that be the title of the book, and that also kind of be the linchpin idea, if you will, of what I was trying to put out there.
Did you feel a relief of pressure when you put that out there?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot.
Sure. But I mean, I have a career, you know. Ah!
Oh,
I lost you. Sorry.
We got you. We got ceiling, floor, ceiling, wall.
Oh. Hey, Ethan, huh? I have a career that is not, a tell-all. I work in IT where if we're known for anything, it's that we don't talk about anything ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not without fear that all of this stuff goes out there. Fear is not even the right word. I think it's, vulnerability. You know, I've said a couple of times since the book has come out, that it's like, I've gone to the grocery store and I'm not wearing any clothes, but everybody else is. Like how you said when we were first chatting, you know all this stuff about me, but I don't know all this stuff about you. And it's kind of like that. But at the same time, if you were sitting on my porch, there's nothing in that book that I wouldn't share with you over a glass of wine. You know, these are the stories that I have to tell. This is what I bring to the table. So I want to live in a world where we all tell these stories.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved the book. I think it's fantastic. I think anybody that may be listening to this, who may be going through some struggles themselves, or maybe holding a lot in, or maybe are feeling depressed, read Liz's book, because it really shows how to be truthful. And I forget where it was in the book, but you talked about just being true to yourself is the number one key of getting this out there and getting help for yourself and helping yourself towards recovery. If you're feeling depressed and things like that, is just being honest and being truth. And you kind of just hit on that is just, you know, once you put it out there, it was kind of like, boom, that was your goal to get that out there and get that, you know, it's going to help you with recovering from whatever depression or whatever you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm hitting the spot on or not, but I feel like that's what I felt like I took away from that part. So if there's anybody out there, you know, that is hurting, who maybe is in a dark point in their life, there's light. And in the end of your book, when you wrote to your reader, one of the last things you told your reader was,
the darkness is going to lie to you because it's afraid of the light. So the darkness is going to tell you that you're alone, and the darkness is going to tell you that there is no light, because the second that a light is shined, the darkness is gone, and it doesn't want that to happen. So I think we have to remember, even when you're at that extreme, that that's not all there is. And that's where speaking your truth is sort of, you know, reaching your hand out from the darkness and asking somebody else to shine their light. That's what every story that somebody comes forward and tells is a sliver of light. So if we can all do that, you know, then nobody is alone in their darkness anymore, which is a probably a very idealistic hope. But, you know, I mean, ever since we lost my mom to, again, what I think of as this disease of silence or this disease of darkness, my goal is to keep shining a little bit of light. And that doesn't mean that I don't live in darkness, because I do, not all the time, but I definitely do. And I definitely will again. And I think that's what is in that letter to the reader at the end, is somebody, a reader had reached out to me and said, how did you get there to healed? And I'm like, whoa, this is not healed. This is healing, which is probably all it ever will be. You know, I don't think there is healed. I think there is healing.
You telling your story, and I think that's part of what like hooked me, was because I could feel how genuine it was. I could feel that this was coming. Like I like to write personally, and I just kind of throw all my stuff out there, but I like to just, I can only do it when I'm in this state of emotions, whether it's good, bad, ugly, whatever it is. And I just put whatever I'm feeling, that's what I throw out there. And, you know, for me being a guy, when I do that, I feel like I'm vulnerable because I'm putting my emotions out there, and I'm putting that, like, you know, with just the way I feel. So for me, I feel vulnerable when I do it, but every time I do it, and if I do it, I do it on Facebook generally, or I do it in my own writing. I literally text myself sometimes. It's weird. But anyways, so I feel vulnerable, but almost every single time I either get a message or multiple messages, or somebody will comment and just say, I needed this today. Mm-hmm. And your book is that on a whole nother level, where I know, just I want to say for a fact, although I can't because I don't know that it's a fact. I would assume this is a fact. Your book is going to save lives. Your book is going to help somebody. If it hasn't already, it's going to help people through, you know, knowing that somebody's there, knowing that you lived it and that other people live it. And that no matter what we see on the outside, we can all relate. We all have these feelings on the inside, and we all have this, whether we realize it or not, we are in this together. Your book is going to, if it hasn't already, help people. And I would encourage anybody who does listen, whether it's writing or whatever is your thing, get your story out there. Mm-hmm. However you can do it, however you want to do it, take your story and put it out. The stories don't always have to have a happy ending, like we've kind of been taught. The story,
or an ending, because we're not there yet.
Right.
Yes.
And the other thing I wanted to say is, yes, you will feel vulnerable. And I don't think that's necessarily because you're a guy, which is probably, you feel more vulnerable. But, you know, there is no such thing as putting your truth out there without feeling vulnerable. But that vulnerability, that's the price of admission right there.
Drop the mic and the podcast. That was
spot
it.
On. Your book is amazing. Beautifully written.
Thank you.
There were moments I laughed. There were moments that were raw and real, that I could feel the pain. I could feel the love and the joy. And there's other moments that brought me back to situations, like Paul just said, it will help people.
The
suffering, some feeling lost or confused, feeling broken. I love the shredded glass story. Incredible. The ups and downs, of your relationship with your mother and, you know, what you did through that. And yet the love that you show her in this book is incredible. So the book again is called The Price of Admission, Embracing a Life of Grief and Joy. Liz Petrone, you got to check her out. Her web blog is lizpetrone.com. She's on Twitter, Lizzie Petrone, Instagram, Lizzie Petrone, and on Facebook at Facebook, Liz Petrone blog. Absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, but we're not letting you go yet.
Oh. You're not
out of here yet. We like to play a game called Hooga.
We're playing it? We're playing it? Okay.
You're right. This one's for Liz. Liz, if you go back and tell your 10-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Not to put you on the spot or anything, Liz.
Wear sunscreen.
That's actually a great one. That is really good, though.
That is great.
No baby oil and laying out in the sun. No sunning in your hair. Just sunscreen, guys.
Sunscreen.
I think really, if there was one thing, it would be don't. Can I say the F word?
Sure.
Don't fucking abandon yourself. Don't abandon yourself, because the work to get back is going to be real hard.
Fantastic.
Don't abandon yourself. Great
answer.
And
wear sunscreen.
And wear sunscreen.
Too cool.
Man, this was a lot of fun, guys. Liz, thank you again. You're a pleasure. I can't wait
thank
to read
you.
More about, you know, what you put out there, and keep us posted so that we can keep putting it out there. But again,
for sure,
please go out and check out Liz's book, The Price of Admission, Embracing a Life of Grief and Joy. It's fantastic. As we try to protect our mental health and cope with uncertainty, it's more important than ever that we be there for each other and take steps to prevent suicide. And we kind of talked about this. You don't have to be a mental health professional to make a difference. There are simple things that we can all do to safeguard our mental health, and you don't have to do it alone. And I think that's an important lesson from tonight. From learning the warning signs for suicide and what to do if you are worried that someone is struggling, or maybe advocating for, you know, suicide prevention, whatever it takes, get involved. Have a real conversation. If you know somebody who's struggling, have a real conversation about your own or maybe others' mental health, and bring education programs into your community if you can. We can all learn new ways to help each other save lives. And their hashtag is together we keep things going, hashtag keep things going. So that came from the American Foundation for Suicide and Prevention, and we 100% support them.
No, I just amen to everything you just said. So important.
Perfect.
Incredible.
Paul, take us away, man.
All right, guys, we're going to end like we end every week. And just a friendly reminder that we only get one chance on this earth to not take life for granted, to live every day like it could be your last, to love each other, and to live well.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Live well. Dude, you took my live well.
I know, man. It just came out. I don't know what to do. It just came out.
You're supposed to go to the spot, and then I always say live well.
Oh, it just came out. I didn't know what to do. It happened.
It's all good. I love it. I'm playing.
I couldn't
it like
stop. I couldn't.
I might even keep this conversation in the end. You stole my live well. La, 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 la.